I asked a question last week, and you answered the question pertaining to Genesis chapter 2, and I think the other verses in chapter 9, and you taught about the precedent set for the law of giving, of eating the herbs, and we compared that to the same law given there in chapter 9 about the eating of the meat. And I kind of drew a conclusion from your answer, and you can tell me if the conclusion is correct.
Okay.
That if we carry that thought completely out, we come up with the fact that Gentiles should not eat unclean meat. Is that a correct conclusion?
No. Not correct conclusion. Should I proceed?
And yes, and then if it's not, then why not?
Okay.
Because if you the discussion last week was based on the same thing, that there were certain, you brought out the fact that there were some herbs that were good for you, some were bad for you.
Right.
Some animals are good for you and some are bad. And you said that man should use his own intellect to determine which were good and which were bad.
That's right, but that's not a halacha. In other words...
Okay, well, I'm going to hang up and then
okay.
You can take off.
Okay. There are many people that confuse health issues with halacha. The purpose of the Torah is really not to perfect the body, but to perfect the soul. And the laws of the Torah were not given as health rules. And many people, I know this is a common misinterpretation. People think that the kosher laws are health laws. They really aren't. First of all, factually they aren't. And people always choose as an example the pig. They say, well, you can get trichinosis from a pig. That may be true, but the horse is also prohibited, and so is a camel, and so is a bear, and many other animals, and they're just as healthy as the kosher ones. So the kosher laws are not really health laws. That's an erroneous idea. What I meant was that God gave man the ability to think and to determine what is healthful and what is not healthful for him to eat. And he should only eat those things which are healthful. But the Torah does not tell man what those things are. That was given over to man as a scientific investigator. And God did not give us the science of medicine at Sinai. He gave us the science of ethics and philosophy and perfection and metaphysics, but not the science of health or chemistry or biology. That's not the purpose of the Torah. That man is endowed with an intellect, and he's supposed to pursue it insofar as he can. But the Torah does not give us any clues on health, or that's not really the purpose of the Torah. It just so happens that the I would say even more than it just so happens, I would say the Torah has no laws which are not healthy, not helpful for man. That is true, because God...
Rabbi?
Yes.
All right, let me insert right there. But if we're carrying the idea that you postulated last week, no, the Torah doesn't teach us to be healthy, but there's not laws in there relating to that, but... Man should take care of himself. I know you're not saying that man should not take care of himself.
Absolutely.
All right. But.
Okay. That is a command that man should take care of
himself. All right. But then.
But how he does it is based upon the knowledge that he had at the time. In other words, in 1994, we take care of ourselves according to the discoveries of modern medicine. Many things we know today, I know when I was a youngster, I read that the heart patients were fed raw liver. That was considered to be very healthy for them at that time. And now we know it's about the equivalent to almost a poison for a person who has a heart condition to eat liver, which is very high in cholesterol. So the knowledge of medicine is really something which God allows man to gain, and it's something which man is supposed to engage in. For his health, he's supposed to search after what is healthy and study it and act according to his wisdom and his knowledge. But that comes under Deuteronomy, where a person is obligated to take care of himself. But there's no specific laws in the Torah regarding that, and regarding it as to what those healthy things are. The only thing is, there is no law in the Torah that is unhealthy, because God in his divine wisdom would never give man a law which would impair his health. So that we can't say, the negative we can't say. In other words, that there is no law in the Torah that causes a person license to be unhealthy. Okay? I mean, on the contrary, many of the ethical laws, for instance, the Talmud deduces from the fact that in Deuteronomy, when the Torah speaks about the eating of meat, so the Torah says, when you will desire to eat meat. So the Talmud says that teaches a person that how to live, and that a person should not eat meat unless he really has a desire for it. In other words, he shouldn't eat it constantly on a steady basis. But that's because of ethics, that a person should have restraint and shouldn't just indulge himself all the time. That happens to be true from the health standpoint, also from the knowledge we have at this time concerning human health. But that is not the objective of the law. Okay? Now, I know it's bothering. Now, how I know that the Ben Noach is permitted to eat, permitted according to halacha. Again, he doesn't have to eat anything, and certainly should not eat something which he knows is unhealthy. If a piece of meat is filled with bacteria, he shouldn't consume that piece of meat. But that's because he's supposed to take care of himself. But do you follow? I mean, but halachically, in other words, according to the Torah's legal halachic structure, the Ben Noach can eat everything, and this is stated openly in Genesis 9:3, and we can't twist the verse itself. Of course, it says openly, every creeping thing that is alive for you, it shall be to eat. So it says everything, which is all inclusive. Can't be more clear than that, and we can't twist that sentence out of its plain meaning. We can never take a verse of the Torah and just twist it into something else. That's a clear verse, and that's it. You know, that's the law. You can't change that. Okay.
Okay, Rabbi.
Okay. Right. Now I know what is disturbing you is, and this is perhaps after I hung up last week, I realized that, and I wasn't perhaps sensitive to the question that David raised. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to formulate a question precisely. Let me try to formulate it if I can. The question, of course, that would be raised in that verse is, why does the Torah say, speak in such a fashion, in such language? In other words, why does it say, every creeping thing that is alive for you, it shall be to eat? Okay? That's a strange way of presenting a human being with a diet.
Rabbi,
okay.
Let me put this back in. See, there's no problem with every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you.
Okay.
But there is a qualifying statement in that verse also.
Where?
Even as the green herb have I given you all things.
Even as the green grass.
Yeah, all right. Even as the green grass.
Just like I gave you the green grass before.
Yeah.
I'm now giving you everything. Now, everything means everything.
All right. But this is what you spoke of. You spoke of last week that there were herbs that were good for you and herbs that were not good for you.
But that's a health thing. But you're permitted to eat every
okay.
herb. There's no halachic prohibition on any. Okay. There is no halachic prohibition on anything that grows from the ground, even for Ben Israel. There is no, Ben Israel can eat everything that grows from the ground. There is no restriction from a halachic sense. If it's poisonous, of course, but not because, that's not halachic. That's simply sensible in terms of the fact that a person has to take care of himself. But that's a different category than a halachic restriction. So the Ben Israel, for instance, pork would be prohibited. It has nothing to do with health. It is simply a prohibited animal. And the same thing would be true of the donkey or of the horse or of the bear or of the lion or a tiger or any animal which is not grouped in the ones that are permissible to eat. So, but over here, the Torah makes no bones about it. It states quite clearly that just like you could eat any grass of the field, there are no restrictions on them. There's no restrictions on anything that you eat if for the Ben Noach. Now remember, I'm a stingy person, and I don't want you to eat this food. If I were to ask you what kind of a prohibition is that a prohibition of eating? What would your answer be? Is that an eating prohibition? Yes or no? I say, you know, I'm a stingy fellow, very frugal, don't like people to eat my food, and I say to you, don't eat that food on the table. Am I giving you an injunction, a prohibition against eating? Is that an eating kind of prohibition? The answer is no, because I may be telling you not to eat, but what I'm really saying is not to steal. In other words, I don't care about eating. I am a stingy person, and I don't want you to consume what I own. So therefore, I say, don't eat it. Even though I may use the language of eating, it's not eating that I'm concerned about. It's the loss of my property, of what I own. So therefore, the prohibition may be expressed in terms of eating, but it's not meant as an eating prohibition. It's meant as a stealing prohibition. Okay? Now, I'll give you another case. Let's say you come to my home, and I have the food on the table, and there's something there which I don't feel is really healthy. It's been laying around a few days, and I don't want you to harm yourself by eating. And I say, don't eat that piece of meat. There, what kind of a prohibition is that? That is an eating prohibition, because I'm not concerned about my property. I'm a very generous fellow. But I don't want you to eat that because I don't want you to harm yourself. So therefore, my prohibition is in terms of eating. So I could use the same expression, eating, and I could mean two different things. In one case, I mean don't steal. In another case, I mean don't eat it. Okay? Now let's just keep that in mind, and let us return to this verse. Now, if you remember, we said last week, we explained the reason why the original law was that man was not permitted to eat, to kill animals. And that was that he was not permitted to interfere with the given order of creation, which means that he had limited rights on this planet. He had no right to interfere with the animal kingdom and to deprive them of life. Okay? So now I'm going to ask you a question. When we say that man cannot eat, man, original man, Adam the first, before Noah, when he was not permitted to eat animals, was this an eating prohibition? What is the answer? The answer is no. It is not an eating prohibition. The eating isn't the problem. The problem is the killing. In other words, the destroying of life, exercising your power over the animal kingdom and using them for your own purpose. It's not the eating per se, but the fact that you have to respect the divine order that God has implanted in nature, and you have no right to go over to that animal and take its life away. So it's expressed in terms of eating, but the nature of the prohibition is not really eating. It's really not distorting the given order that God created on this planet. Now, when God existed until the time of Noah. The moment Noah came out of the ark, so God reduced this command. And he said, until now, it was very difficult for you. You couldn't eat meat. And that's a struggle. It's difficult for man. I am giving you a permit now, okay? I'm removing that sanction. In other words, you are not restricted anymore insofar as respecting the animal kingdom. You have rights over the animal kingdom. But I'm just going to limit it now to removing a limb of an animal while it is alive, because then it has its designation and you have no right to take that limb and use it for your own consumption. Okay? So the law has been reduced, okay? But in the reducing of the law, God had to give a permit. He had to undo what was before. Now, before, the prohibition was against killing every animal. Now, God removed the prohibition. So when he removes the prohibition, what he's saying is he's not giving a diet to the sons, to Noah and his sons. What he's telling them is there's no more restrictions on the animal kingdom. Therefore, he says every animal, because when he removed that restriction, he removed it completely from every animal, every species that exists. In other words, God did not remove, it wouldn't be logical to remove remove it from one group of animals and not another group of animals. Okay? So since God's laws are logical, so God removed them from every animal. It does not mean that you must eat every creeping thing. It's not talking about diet here. What it's talking about is there is no more restriction in any of the species of animals that exist, and yet that restriction was removed completely, okay, which makes sense. In the framework of removal, God says you are not obligated anymore not to distort this nature through killing the species, and therefore he removed that completely from every species. Doesn't mean that you have to eat everything, but the removal is there. What you eat now depends on what you wish to eat. But in terms of rights, you have rights over every species, and this was removed. The only rights you do not have is that when the you have a right to kill the animal, but you have no right while it is alive to remove it, remove that a part of that animal for food. That restriction remains. Okay? So therefore, the verse does not sound like it, now the question is removed, because if it's an eating verse, so you're right, why should God say to man, eat every creeping thing? This God is saying, eat the worms and grasshoppers and everything else like that, okay? Actually, grasshoppers are kosher, some grasshoppers. But the point I'm making is, God is not saying to man that he should eat these things. He is saying he is not restricted with regard to the species. So he's not restricted with regard to any species. Doesn't mean he's supposed to eat every species. He can, halachically, he can. There's no violation. But it's not a diet recommendation, okay? As a diet recommendation, the verse sounds strange. That the verse says every creeping thing you should eat, as if God is telling you eat all kinds of creeping things. That's not what he's saying. What God is saying is there are no restrictions from any of the animal kingdom. That means all animals, and the best way to say all animals is simply everything that moves, everything that has life, okay? That's the universal, the most inclusive statement possible. But I want to make it clear that the context of the statement cannot be understood unless we use what we learned from the Talmud last week, which is that it's not an eating concept per se. Okay, it's a concept of man being given permission to exercise his control over, to extend the exercising of his control over the animal kingdom. And that was extended to all animals. Why should some animals have it and others not? It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, this verse speaks in the most inclusive way possible, which means this restriction is removed from the animal kingdom, which all of them. There's no reason to God doesn't have any favorites, okay? So therefore, the restriction is removed from all the animal kingdom. It is not a diet recommendation, okay? But halachically, it is clear that the Ben Noach can eat anything because he can exercise his control over any species in the planet. Doesn't mean he has to or he should, okay? We're going to get into, since this, and I mean, in terms of things that are disgusting, I mean, you have to realize that, we're going to get to that in a moment, but you have to also realize that certain things that some people find disgusting, others don't. I mean, snails may sound disgusting to some people, and in France, it's considered a specialty, okay? So you have to keep that in mind also, that a lot of this has to do with what you like and what you don't like. It has to do with the way you're raised. And, I mean, I don't think people would eat grasshoppers today, yet grasshoppers are kosher, certain grasshoppers, okay? So the way we feel towards these things, a lot has to do with the way we are raised. But I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But let's right now. I think that this should be clear. Okay. So.
All right. We got. There's one other question that we'd like to factor in at this point.
Go ahead.
All right. Man. We will agree that man was not permitted to kill animals in order for food.
Right.
But then, what about for the purpose of sacrifices?
Yes, that was my point. That's correct.
All right, so man was shedding the blood of animals for the purpose of sacrifices.
That is a very good question. You mean it's defined by Abel.
That's right.
That's correct. I'm going to explain that.
Okay, and then, of course, the only examples we have are Abel and then, of course, Noah.
Right, that's correct.
And okay. So I think we would have to, if we're going to cover the subject of killing.
That's good. Very good. That's an excellent question.
Okay,
excellent
all right, question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for asking that question. That's an excellent question. The question is, what about the animals of sacrifice, which you see they were permitted to do, like the case of Abel? Now, I don't know if you remember this far back, but I think last year I spoke about the various categories of sacrifices. And I said one of the categories of sacrifices, and that is the sacrifice called Shalamim, the general sacrifice, is not for a sin, but it is something which a person does to demonstrate that everything belongs to God. Okay? Now, we have to think through this thing very carefully over here. The reason why the one is not permitted, or to Adam, from the time of Adam to the time of Noah, why were they not permitted to kill the animal for their own food? The reason is because they had to be constantly reminded of the fact that everything belongs to God. That is, it's not because of the animal, okay? This is not a law of the ASPCA, okay? It's not the Humane Society law. It's a law of God in order that man should recognize God, okay? And that he has to subordinate himself to God's will. That is the purpose. Therefore, if the animal was used, on the contrary, as a demonstration that all belongs to God, that was permissible, because that is precisely the same idea, even more so. If a person had sheep, like Abel, which he used for the wool, so if he takes them and he sacrifices it for God, so what he's doing is, on the contrary, he's demonstrating the fact that everything belongs to God, even things that he has possession over. So in that framework, he is not only not violating the law, but he is demonstrating exactly what the purpose of the law is, namely that everything belongs to God and we have to follow his order. Okay, it should be clearly understood that the reason why man was not permitted to interfere with the animal kingdom is not because of God's love of animals, okay? I know that's an emotional point, but the fact is that's the way the Torah views it. It's not because God loves the animals, it's because God loves man, and man, for him, perfection involves recognition of the fact that there is a divine order in the universe, a divine order which he must submit to, subordinate himself to, and he must constantly recognize, okay? He must never forget that and think that he is almighty and all-powerful, all right, which man has a tendency to do. That is the purpose. That was the purpose of that law. And that is, again, the purpose of the law of not taking the limb off the animal. It is not, as we said yesterday, many people think it's a kindness to animal law. That's because people always put things into the categories that they have in their mind. But when you study the Torah, you find that is not really what it is. Although the Torah does believe in being kind to animals, but not from, there are other sources, not this source. But this law is not there for that purpose. This law is there for one purpose, to teach man that there is a divine order. When he realizes he cannot just at will do what he wants, take an animal and pull its limb off and use it as a, he has to realize why, because there's a divine order here. And it reminds him of God's divinity, and that he always must look to what the divine will is in everything, every aspect of his life. But this is a constant reminder of that. Okay? So therefore, sacrifices were not a violation, because in sacrifice, man is demonstrating precisely that. Namely, that even things which he owns are really not his. Everything really, as it says in Psalms, to God belong, to God is the earth and everything that fills it. Okay? So, that is the concept. But Hashem Arach Mah, to God belongs the earth and everything that, and everything therein. So this is the demonstration through sacrifice, and it's a demonstration through not taking animal and eating it, using it for your own satiation. That would be a demonstration of the contrary, that these things are under my control. I can do whatever I want. Okay, that's the answer to that question. Good, very good question. And
couple more questions. One pertaining to the sacrifices. Are we to understand that all these sacrifices at that time were burnt offerings? None of them were eaten at all?
That's correct.
Okay, let me ask you one more question about clean animals and unclean animals. I'm a little unclear on one more point. Why was Noah made aware they were clean animals, unclean animals? What purpose was that?
Why?
Yes.
Okay.
Why did he certainly didn't need to know for dietary reasons.
That's correct.
So obviously there was some other reason.
Yes. Oh,
and
okay.
So no one needed to be eating clean animals at that time for eating purposes.
That's correct.
God had to have something else in mind.
That's correct. Okay. That's a good question.
All right, we have about 2 minutes before we have to turn the tape.
Okay. What Mr. Buchanan said is correct. I mentioned the sacrifice of Shalamim, but not just as an example. Actually, it was the olos that were given, which is they were burnt offerings. Okay. It's not as it says that in Genesis about Noah, that he brought the olos, which is burnt offerings. Okay. Let me see. I'll tell you which verse it is. Yes, it is in Genesis 8:20. It states openly that he brought olos. The word olos means burnt offerings on the sacrifice, which is exactly what Mr. Buchanan said. It was not; he did not eat them. Okay. But the concept was that everything belongs to God. And now, what I would like, the second question was, why did Noah have to be informed about the kosher animals? And the reason is precisely because of that. And this is stated openly in Genesis, that he only offered the clean animals on the altar. He only sacrificed the clean animals. Now, of course, you'll ask me, so why did he have to sacrifice only the clean animals? Why couldn't he sacrifice the unclean animals? That time was before the time the Torah was given. In my opinion, I think the reason is because it was extremely important that the sacrifices of Noah should not be like pagan sacrifices. And if you study the primitive peoples, you'll find that they would sacrifice exotic animals, believing that these animals have certain special powers. They would sacrifice animals that they felt had strength and power. And, even a deer, which is kosher, we don't, is not sacrificed. Because a lot of people associate with a deer strength, running, special powers. Okay? And I believe that philosophy, which is the philosophy against idolatrous type of sacrifices, that Noah was a perfected man and he was obligated to be involved in as well. He would not be permitted to take an exotic animal like a tiger or a lion or a gorilla or some animal which primitive people would sacrifice thinking that they're going to get the powers of these animals, that would be a primitive pagan kind of sacrifice. So that's why he too was obligated to sacrifice only those animals which are kosher, which are, by the way, ordinary, very ordinary animals, nothing exotic, sheep and cattle and nothing exotic. The exotic is always the primitive and the idolatrous in the Torah. During the time of Noah, the time of the flood, they were committing idolatry, and this is mentioned really in Genesis 4:26. Okay, where it says that the verse says, and to Seth also was born a son, and his name was Enosh. That period of Enosh was a period of idolatry, and it says, then it became profane to call in the name of God, which means idolatry. Okay, so that's when profanity began, and that's when the idols began. So there was idolatry before Noah. Okay, so. Let us. Does that answer the question? And then, any other question on that? That's a pretty open verse there. And
the translation that we have doesn't translate it that way. It just said, in those days, people began to invoke the name of God, and it uses the four-letter name there.
Right. But in the Orange Cup says the word huchal, okay?
Okay.
If you take a look at Rashi, you'll see the word huchal means to remove the sanctity from. It comes from the word chulin, removal of sanctity.
Yeah. Okay.
The word, okay?
Okay. You may proceed then. Thank you.
Okay. Let me continue then, and let me go back to. By the way, we'll see that there is when we go further in the Talmud, there are other references to the fact that there was idolatry in the time of Noah before the flood. All right, but it is not really hard to believe, because idolatry is very much a part of human nature. And it's a given into a component of human nature, so it stands to reason that it would exist before also. But we'll see, there are other references to the fact that there was idolatry in the time of the generation of the flood. Now, what I'd like to continue with is more on the kosher and non-kosher and the eating halachos, because I think that they're interesting, and I think they're important to have a good grasp of. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take when you study Talmud, there's a big mistake a lot of people make. They think that it's like reading a book. You start from page one, then you go to page five, page ten, you progress. And in Talmud, it does not work that way, because the Talmud is really a discussion of the scholars. There is no page one, there's no page ten, and there's no page 50. Because in the Talmud, it is a record of the discussions of the scholars, and every scholar knew every other piece of Talmud, all right? So there is no place you could start from. That's what's difficult about Talmud, and that's why Talmud slips from one subject to another, just goes up and back, because they're taking the whole system and juggling it around when they're making, when they have these discussions, and they're assuming that everything else is known. All right, so it's different than any other book. It's one of the problems of reading Talmud. You cannot approach it as you would an ordinary book. It's not. It's discussions of scholars who have at their fingertips every verse in the Torah, every Mishnah, okay, and the concepts and ideas behind it. Now these guys, they're discussing it. So they're throwing around everything. You got to know everything. It does not follow. It's not a didactic kind of work, okay? That's why it jumps from one subject to another, and that's why there is no order, and I'm going to jump now to another tractate, all right? But it's part of this this concept, and I think that it's appropriate here. Okay. I'm in now in tractate Avodah Zarah. That's a tractate that deals with idolatry, and it is on page 64b, all right? Now, we have an interesting discussion here. The question is a question with regard to Ger Toshav. Now, That's a phrase I think everybody's familiar with. It means the non-Jew that joins the Jew in the land of Israel, all right, and has a right to live there, okay, provided he complies with certain requirements. Now, the question is, what are those requirements? And, of course, everyone's thinking the requirement is that he must accept the seven laws of Noah. That is correct. That is the way that is where the halacha has decided. But there were two other opinions that we don't hold by. The halachic system did not decide in their favor, but nevertheless, they were opinions of great men. And I'm going to bring in those other two opinions right now, and I think you'll find them interesting. Okay. One opinion is, all he has to do to be the Ger Toshav is simply deny and accept upon himself not to worship idols. In other words, giving up of idolatry. That's all. That's one opinion. If he does that, fine. Then he has a right to dwell in the land. That's one opinion. Now, that's one side of the spectrum. Now, there's another opinion that goes all the way to the other side of the spectrum. All right? The seven laws, the position that we maintain, that we the sukkah, okay? But there's one that he will not accept, and he does not have to accept, and cannot accept, actually, and that is he will eat nevela. Okay. Now, what does the word nevela mean? All right? We find it in the Torah, in the Bible itself, and here it's in, I'll tell you exactly where it is. It's one place. This is the, I'm giving you one place, I think. It's in Deuteronomy 14:20. Alright? It says, you shall not eat any nevela. Now, I don't know what your translation is, but I have never seen a correct one on this word. My translation, which is the Jerusalem Bible, says, you shall not eat anything that dies of itself. Okay, that's not correct. I don't know what you have. Carrion? You probably have, I don't know what the King James have. They do not have one. But carrion is, would be wrong, if that's what it is. I imagine that's what it would say. An animal that dies of itself is not correct either. What it means is the word nevela means any animal that dies through any other process than slaughtering, kosher slaughtering. Shechita, okay? That's what the word nevela means. So the Torah says, you shall not eat any animal that dies through any other means besides slaughtering. Okay. Now, just as a as an aside, but I think it's something which we should be aware of, where in the Torah does it say that you have to slaughter an animal, and then you'll kill an animal in any specific way? Is there any reference to this in the Torah? Okay, there is a reference in the Torah. The reference in the Torah is found in Deuteronomy 12, all right? Deuteronomy 12, verse 21. Okay. Now, here's the verse I mentioned to you before, by the way, verse 20. Take a look at the verse 20. It says like this. It says, when God will expand your boundaries as he has spoken to you, in other words, you won't be close to the Mishkan or the Mikdash, the temple, and then you're going to say that I'm going to eat flesh because you will desire to eat flesh. And that's where the rabbi says that, why does the Torah say because you will desire to eat flesh? Because the Torah is parenthetically teaching a person that he should not be a glutton. And that meat is something which is should be eaten rarely when you really have a desire for it. A person has a need, he has a desire, it's okay for him to enjoy himself. But in, as a matter of fact, that's what it says. It says, you shall eat it with all the desire of your heart, which means it's fine to enjoy oneself, but not to be a glutton. So wait till that desire comes, and once you have that desire, then enjoy yourself. But don't make it an everyday occurrence. That's teaching a person a way of life. All right? It's not one of the 613, but it is, parenthetically, the Torah does offer a person not only laws, but also guidance insofar as his personal habits are concerned, and teaches them how to get closer to God and to perfect himself and remove himself more from the slavery to the physical desires. Okay. Now we have verse 21. It says, when the place that God will choose will be removed from you, alright, so you cannot bring an animal to the temple, in other words, and eat the shlamim as a sacrifice, and then eat from the sacrifice, because if you remove them, it'll take too long to travel there. So God says, then you shall take, you shall slaughter, I use the word zavachta, you shall slaughter, I'll just leave it blank, in other words, kill, slaughter, whatever. It says, from your oxen and from your sheep, which God gave you, and then it says two interesting words, as he has commanded you. Alright? Now what does that mean? You should kill the animal as he has commanded you. Okay? That as he has commanded you makes no sense. There's no command for a person to slaughter animals. I could be a vegetarian and never violate any law of the Torah. There's no such law that you have to slaughter animals. So the oral law explains this, and it's the only explanation. That is that God commanded somewhere else about how to kill animals. Okay? Where did God command man about the killing of animals? The answer is very simple, if you remember the Bible. It's in Leviticus. In Leviticus, you have chapter after chapter about the animal sacrifices, and there it uses a very specific word. The word is vishochat. Okay, that's what we call shechita or shochet. I'm sure you may have seen it in the press, shochet, S-C-H-O-C-H-E-T. Okay? So the word, so there you have an unused word, shochet. When the Torah, when the Bible wants to tell you about killing an animal, which it does mention in Leviticus, it uses a different word, just to kill it. Taharogu, harog, means to kill. But in Leviticus, where it speaks about the animal, where it speaks about the animal for the sacrifice, there it uses a specific word of shochat, okay? Not kill, but shochat. What is shochat? So here we see the Torah in Deuteronomy is saying, when you want to kill this animal because you want to eat, and you kill it the way I commanded you. So here we see that there was a special command of killing with regard to the sacrifices. It wasn't just any kind of way you wish. It was that shochat, very specific. Okay. And that is the source in the Torah for the fact that an animal must be slaughtered in a specific way. All right. What the specific way is, that is in the that we have carried down through the oral tradition, and the basics of what it is, there's no debate among the scholars on that. So that came down straight and precise with regard to how it should be done. So now we have this this law of a special way of killing of shochat for the Ben Israel. Now, anything outside that method, any animal that dies through any other method than the shochat, the shechita, the method that I mentioned before, which says, as God commanded you, any other method which causes the death of the animal, whether it's stoning, stabbing, choking, whatever it might be, electrocuting, any method outside of that method, lethal injection, anything you think of, would be nevelah. Okay, that word. Now, the Torah says in Deuteronomy 12, we mentioned before, that you shall not eat. Deuteronomy 14, 20. You shall not eat any nevelah. However, it says over there in that same verse that if you have a nevelah, for instance, if the shochet slips and doesn't do a proper job, so the method of killing is disqualified and is not kosher. So it says that you are obligated here to give it to the ger toshav, or you could sell it to the stranger, but the ger toshav, you should give it as a gift because you are obligated to support the ger toshav, since he is a fellow citizen in the land. So so over here we see clearly that the ger toshav eats the nevelah. Now, my question is like this. Why cannot the ger toshav accept upon himself, since he can accept every other commandment of the Torah, why can he not accept upon himself the fact that he's only going to eat meat that's slaughtered according to the laws, according to the kosher laws? Okay? He can accept upon himself not to eat pig, not to eat a horse, not to eat the unclean animals. He has a right to accept that upon himself. As a matter of fact, according to this view, he can't live in the land unless he accepts everything, which would be that as well. Okay? So that even though we don't hold by that view, there was such a view. But the view made sense, right? Because according to that view, the concept was you cannot have a citizen who is not... You see, the three views can be understood as follows. The first view maintains the only thing is there can't be idolatry in the land of Israel. So as long as he's not an idolater, we don't care what he does. Fine. The second one is it's not enough. It's not simply a matter of removal of idolatry. It's a matter of having a person living by the same system. In other words, the system of Sinai. But there are two divisions in that system, but he has to be part of the system, so he must accept the seven laws. All right? That's the accepted view. But the third view was that's not enough. If he's going to live in the land, he's got to practice every one of the commandments. You can't have people in the land not practicing the laws. That would not be beneficial to the Ben Israel, who would see actions being done constantly that are not within his frame of obligation. Okay, that's this position. We don't hold by that position, but that was the position that was maintained. Nevertheless, even according to that position, the Ger Toshav could not accept upon himself logical halachic reason for this. It's not a discriminatory reason, because on the contrary, he could do everything else. He could do more important things than that, all right? So why should he not be permitted to keep the kosher laws? Why can he not keep the kosher laws? Has anybody knows the answer to this one? I would be extremely pleasantly surprised. Anybody? It's not easy.
With the kosher laws not being accepted, the kosher laws are one of the things that separated Israel from the rest of the nations.
There are a lot of things that separate Israel from the rest of the nations, and certainly the types of the species of animals that one eats does separate, but that's the Gerkus that's been accepted upon. He's supposed to accept upon himself according to this view. He's not supposed to eat any of the other animals.
Mm-hmm.
So insofar as the species are concerned, he's in there. He's accepting everything, but this one he can't accept. The reason is based upon what I told you, I believe, a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I mentioned to you that there is one strange case, and that is with regard to both Ben Israel and Ben Noah have the same restriction. They're not permitted to remove the limb of a living creature for a purpose of eating. But there is a difference. And I mentioned to you that if an animal is slaughtered ritually, and the animal is still heaving, still breathing, so there the Ben Noah has a more serious law than the Ben Israel. He cannot take a piece of flesh off that animal and eat it, okay? While it is still alive, until it dies. Whereas the Ben Israel at that moment can. That's when somebody asked about the blood, and I mentioned raw flesh, there's no violation of eating blood. The violation of eating blood is only blood that has been drained or moved from its original source, okay? The blood that's part of the meat, there's no violation on that. And that can be understood because the idolaters would only use blood, drained blood. They wouldn't use... And one of the reasons for blood is the violation is to remove one from the idolatry. And the idolaters wouldn't use meat. They would use the blood drained out of the meat. So it's only drained blood that's prohibited. But blood in a piece of meat, if you eat a piece of meat and the blood is raw, the Ben Israel is allowed to eat that. It does not have to salt it. Okay. So I mentioned that the Ben Israel at that point, technically, while nobody... would do this mean, but we still have to know what God's law is. We have to understand the law. The law is that Ben Israel would be permitted at that point, right after the severing of the esophagus and the trachea, they'd be permitted immediately to take the meat, whereas the Ben Noach cannot at that point. Why can the Ben Noach not do it? And the answer is because for the Ben Noach, we go back to the system of Noah, which we mentioned before, and that is that he cannot exercise any control over an animal while it is alive, all right? Now, for the Ben Noah, it's still alive, all right? Since ritual slaughter is not his method, his determinant is death. So the animal, if there is a moment gap between the slaughtering and between the death, let's say there's a one-minute time interval, so then the Ben Noah still doesn't have his permit yet, because the animal still is technically alive. All right? It's a very short span, and it's only theoretical, but it's important to understand it. So during that gap over there, for the Ben Noah, he is not permitted to eat it, because death is what gives him the permit, because it's still a living animal. Whereas the Ben Israel was given a specific method of slaughter, and for him, the moment the incision is made on the throat with the sharp blade of the shochet, then it becomes permissible to him. All right. So that is why the Ben Noach, the Ger Toshav, cannot accept upon himself to eat slaughtered meat. What it means is for him, the institution of slaughtering is not the permit. The permit is the death. Okay. As a matter of fact, if I'll give you an example, let us say, for instance, a chicken. I've noticed that when they kill a chicken, the chicken can jump around for a while. All right, I think more than other animals. Now, if the chicken, right after its throat is slit, is dismembered, then the Ben Noach would not be permitted to eat that, because it was dismembered while it was still moving. All right? Whereas for the Ben Israel, it makes no difference, because it was slaughtered. The moment it's slaughtered, that's the permit. The permit is, as I have commanded you, as it says in Deuteronomy. All right? So therefore, if a Ben Noah cannot... that they would be astounded. They wouldn't believe it. It sounds crazy. But the word kosher just means right. It doesn't mean there's no. I know it got to mean a lot of things, but it means basically appropriate. So the here is a case where you can have a chicken, all boxed and everything, and for the Ben Israel it would be permissible. For the Ben Noah it would not be permissible because it was dismembered before it actually died. So kosher meat for the Ben Israel is not the same kosher meat for the Ben Noah. In this case, the Ben Noah's restriction is greater. All right?
Rabbi?
Of course, it's a different system. Yes.
Rabbi Katz taught us when he was teaching along these similar lines, and he used the example of a chicken and other animals also.
Okay.
And I stand to be corrected on this, but I think that he checked with some of the slaughterhouses.
Okay.
And what his conclusion was that when the animals are slaughtered, they're disemboweled almost immediately. And their heart is still beating. And sometimes, and of course, as the heart beats, the blood is circulating through the liver.
Yeah.
All right. That the carcass itself was legally dead, but since the blood was still flowing through the liver, that it would not be acceptable to eat the liver of those animals.
That makes perfect sense.
All right. And, okay. So
That is correct. And the reasoning is because in the Ben Noach system, the law of removing a living limb from a living animal is because he cannot exercise any control over the animal as long as it is alive. And that's why it's a different system. That's the only case. That's why the Gerta Shach can accept everything, but he cannot accept upon himself the laws of kosher slaughtering. For him, it would not be. It doesn't apply. It doesn't mean he cannot eat slaughtered meat. That is possible if the animal dies, as David mentioned. But that is the reason for that particular view in the tractate of Avodah Zarah. Okay. Now let us see. I think we're going to have to stop over here, because we will not have enough time to get into the next part of the... How much time we got left? Yeah, does anybody have any questions? Does anybody have more watch? I think we have about 3
more right. questions. One question, and this can just be a simple one. You won't have to take full time on it. The question is a chicken considered an animal, is a fowl considered an animal or aquatic? Animals are considered mammals. So is, the chicken, would it be in the aquatic realm or the animal kingdom?
That is a good... Let me look into that for next time, okay?
Okay.
You mean as far as the Ben Noach is concerned?
Right.
You mean as far as removing the limb?
Right.
Let me check that.
So if it come from the aquatic, it would be dead as soon as you took it out of the water, according to Alaska.
Well, the only thing is that the...
It's air breathing.
The chicken, as far as slaughtering is concerned, requires slaughtering.
Okay.